The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio. Thanks so much for tuning us this morning. It never is taken for granted. We'll not disappoint you. We've got a packed 2 hours coming up with loads of different stuff. We're going to keep you across all of the big stories, the big issues that are important to you, and some lighter moments as well. A special treat coming up, which I'll tell you more about a little later on. We want your views and comments and suggestions and topics and acts of kindness, whatever you want to talk about. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25000, and emails come into us, comments@highlandradio.com. And don't forget, if it suits you, to watch the programme. It's always a very visual show. You can see the majority of our guests, and we're out and about from the studio today, which I'll tell you more about a little later on. You can watch that as well. How do you do so? Well, if you're at home or work from home, you can put it up on your TV. You know, most TVs now that you get are smart TVs, or you might have your Fire Stick as well. And we're on the YouTube app. You just type in Highland Radio Ireland. And if you like the page, then it's more convenient for you to find it into the future. We're across the Facebook pages as well. Too numerous to mention. Just search Highland Radio. And on the X platform as well, Highland Radio Ireland. So whichever way, it's good to have you on board. Right, let's have a look at the papers. The Tyrconnell Tribune. This week, as work progresses on the Remelton Renewable Project, the traffic signs are already causing chaos on the Shore Road, and the town is seeing close up the catastrophe this project will deliver long before it formally started. Gamble Square is a myriad of traffic cones, but worse will follow if this work is allowed to continue. The entire creation of this project is the clearest evidence that the voice of the people counts for nothing. And obviously, the potential for businesses being forced to close, jobs in the town lost, and footfall disappearing is all part of hammering rural Ireland's towns into the ground. A strong piece here from John McAteer. In response to concerns from local councillors and the community councillor Kieran Brogan, mayor of the municipal district, has called an urgent meeting with all 10 councillors invited to find a way forward. Councillor Brogan is one of Remelton's business interests himself, and he's seeking a way forward out of this current situation. If you are a resident in that area or have an interest, we're open to give you a platform here too as well. The Derry People Donegal News lead story. The heartbroken parents of a baby girl who died just 1 hour after she was born at Letterkenny University Hospital have told of their nightmare and pain at an inquest into her death. The inquest into the death of baby Blaheen O'Riordan has been taking place in Letterkenny. It's expected to continue today. If you want to read on from that, this is no slight on the Donegal News. Sometimes inquests, I don't know, it feels very personal to me, and I don't even read on sometimes. But anyway, as I say, that's not a criticism, and quite often too, it's families that want the information out there as well, so I'm not being judgy. The front of the Derry News, 8 former soldiers who were investigated over allegations of giving false evidence about the events of Bloody Sunday will not be prosecuted, the Public Prosecution Service in Northern Ireland has said. On Wednesday, the PPS said the evidential threshold to proceed with a prosecution had not been met. In April 2024, the PPS decided not to prosecute 16 people in relation to allegations of false evidence given to the Bloody Sunday inquiry. Let's go on to the Nationals. Now, we'll start with the Irish Daily Mail. It's an update from the story yesterday. They've been reporting how there wasn't proper vetting of staff, or they didn't have the correct qualifications to work in hospitals, and they were working in the diagnostics field. They broke the story on the weekend and then followed it up yesterday, and they have an update again today. The body tasked with ensuring diagnostic staff have recognised qualifications to work in Irish hospitals has paused its work with the HSC. The Irish Daily Mail revealed yesterday that hospitals are hiring diagnostic staff who do not hold qualifications recognised by the HSC, posing a significant risk to patient safety. Now, I presume they are qualified, and sometimes, especially for international workers, there can be a mismatch of qualifications. You may well be qualified to do the job, but your qualification is not formally recognised. So I'm not trying to in any way diminish the story, but it doesn't mean these people have no qualifications. Well, physiologists conduct crucial work to diagnose patients, and the Irish Institute of Clinical Measurement Physiology is the national professional body that represents clinical measuring or measurement psychologists. The HSC has relied on the organisation to evaluate and advise on accrediting overseas qualifications, but the HSC makes the final decision on hiring. Now, the Mail can reveal that the IICMP has paused its work with the HSC measuring. There will be an agency available, no agency available, sorry, to check the validity and suitability of physiologists being employed. On to the Irish Times now, and the drinks are on me. Joke, the drinks are on Fáilte Ireland. Fáilte Ireland, the state tourism body, spent a certain amount of money on alcohol at two trade fairs. So how much do you think they spent on booze, just booze, at two trade fairs? This is Fáilte Ireland. 60 grand. Okay, that's the bill. I wouldn't like to be picking up that tab. I suppose in some way we are picking it up. So reading on, Fáilte Ireland, the state tourism body, spent 60 grand on alcohol on two trade fairs and €351,000 on food as part of a marketing drive to woo international visitors to Ireland. The hefty bar and food bills were run up at the annual event in Killarney, County Kerry, which is face-to-face workshops between hundreds of Irish tourism industry figures and buyers from 15 countries. Meathal is the Irish language expression for a working party. So maybe there will be a dividend from it, but 60 grand on booze, 351,000 on food for two events to wine and dine people in the tourism industry. Well, wouldn't you love to be in that industry if that's what it's like? Many of you, in fact, perhaps, have health insurance. So just to give you a heads up, consumers have been warned they may face more hikes in the cost of health insurance in the coming months. This is the Irish Independent. VHI Healthcare has announced another price hike to take effect from March 1st. Premiums are going up by 3% for 1.2 million VHI policy holders in a move that will affect those renewing or taking out new policies. The increase will cost a family of two adults and two children between 80 and 250 euro more a year when they renew in a mid-level plan. This is just an area I don't have any understanding or experience from, but I can imagine there are people, particularly, you know, not just those who want to have a safety net if someone gets sick, but perhaps maybe an ongoing illness or a condition that benefits from having health insurance. So you're kind of locked in and you kind of then have to continue to pay the bill, even though it seemingly continues to increase. As I say, I can only imagine what it must be like. I don't have direct experience of that myself. Blue tongue. It's a concern. The Chinese have, remember Micheál Martin was over in China a couple of weeks ago and opened up the beef market? Well, it's closed again, and it's because of blue tongue. Farmers are on high alert after the first cases of blue tongue virus were confirmed in Ireland this week. The virus has been identified on four farms in the Blackwater area of County Wexford. A total of 11 animals have tested positive for the disease, with the first case picked up by the Department of Agriculture's ongoing surveillance testing for the virus. No control zones have been imposed around the affected farms, as it is currently too cold for the virus to replicate in the vector that spreads the disease, biting midgets. Smarts also continue to operate as normal in County Wexford. They have referenced the Chinese market. So China has moved to suspend Irish beef exports on the back of Ireland's blue tongue positive status as part of the protocol agreed for beef exports. Ireland must inform China if a case of blue tongue occurs here. Officials are engaging with their Chinese counterparts on the matter, Dr. Owen Ryan. So there you go. Okay, as soon as that market opened, it's closed again, and a bit of a concern. It seems that the government is pushing forward with plans to ban under 16s from the use of social media. I posted the information on this on socials yesterday. Got quite an interesting reaction. The majority seem to be in favour of this. So Ireland must ban social media usage for anyone under 16, the Taoiseach said. Simon Harris called for a baring of teeth when it comes to children's social media access and enforcement of the digital consent age. The Data Protection Act 2018 established the digital consent age at 16. The Act requires online service providers such as social media platforms, which depend on consent as their legal foundation for processing personal data, to secure parental consent for children to use the platforms. Speaking on Virgin Media's Ireland AM show, Mr. Harris said the era of self-regulation is now over. There are new laws. There are now fines that can be levied. The European Commission this week has now opened an investigation into AI tool Grok. Now, what this means effectively is, how do you ensure under 16 stay off social media? You have to ID everybody. So you have to verify the age of everyone using social media, because that's the only way you can prove that people under 16 are not on that platform. So some of the ways they're going to do that, it could be a one-off transaction. So you have to be of a certain age to have access to a card, your own card. So it could be a 0.01 cent transaction on your card, meaning then you can sign up to X or Facebook or Instagram. There is talk of a government digital wallet. They may well use that. But anyway, effectively what this means, I think it's fantastic, under 16s off social media. But it also means that all adults then will have to, no more anonymous scrolling. No more anonymous commenting. For you to register with social media, you will have to prove that you are over 16. So some of your comments on this. Let me see. Great news, said Marie. Great news. We have an epidemic of mental health problems in young people, and it's only going to get worse. But I have my doubts about the tech skills young ones have now, and they'll find other avenues. There's another thing going on here as well, though, in Britain, and if Britain do it, we do it. They're looking also for you to require or to provide ID for a VPN. So a VPN's virtual private network. People use it to, say, for instance, if you're using IPTV, you might use a VPN to state that you're in another country. Some people use a VPN to access programs from the BBC, but others use it to locate themselves elsewhere for social media. That's how you would get around local laws, but it looks like they could be looking for ID for VPN usage as well. Paul said, 100% agree on this for sure. Social media has young ones messed in the head. I remember a time, kids outside day and night. It's seeing kids' heads stuck in phones. Ban the lot till they're 18. Thank you for that. Ireland is going to push... Oh, sorry, just read what I wrote. Absolutely, says John. It's been scientifically proven that social media before 16 is massively detrimental to brain development and dopamine regulation. Charlie said, and since when did banning something ever work? How about educating on the alternatives as well as the advantages of technology? Corrine said, I'm in favour, but parents and guardians need to take some responsibility too. Is it acceptable, or it is acceptable, to say no to your children? Alan said, overall, I think it could be a positive move. I believe getting rid of the anonymous accounts would be more advantageous. However, given social media giants really don't like regulation, as can be seen with their lack of monitoring internally, you'll find young people and the anonymous trolls will find a way around this. Valerie said, my cousin under 16 went through horrific bullying online. Guards were involved, and it was a horrific time for him and family. He was so close to ending his life. So if it helps to end that, then I'm all for it. We carry a chip around with us every day. If they want to find out something about us, they can, as it is currently. Anyway, online child grooming would be eliminated too. Azariah said, I wonder, will they leave their existing accounts locked till they're are 16, or close them all together? Well, we can look at what they're doing in Australia, and they're allowing people under 16 to download their photos, their information, their data, but I believe their accounts are then shut. And we will follow what's happening internationally. Boris said, they are young, they will overcome. Can't beat a young brain when it comes to tech. Unfortunately, they are the future, and you teach them tech, they will advance, overcome, and make their own platform. They communicate without adults. Tell me I'm wrong. And Joanne said, definitely in favour of this, although no issue here with our 12-year-old having social media accounts. If she attempts to download any app or install social media, her dad automatically gets an email to inform him of any attempts to download, which is exactly how I have operated throughout throughout raising the boys, whether they liked it or not. It's not really my problem if they don't like it. But someone said about, you know, young ones being inside with their head on the phone. Again, we have to take responsibility for that. Our parents, my parents, I had great freedom. I didn't afford the boys the same freedom I had because I was scared, constantly scared, that something bad was going to happen. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you, and you see that, especially around children. Remember those reports that come on Facebook and what have you? A van pulled up and was speaking to a child. They happen really quite regularly. Nothing ever comes of it because often it's someone stopping to ask for directions or, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, don't get me wrong, but it's not like we see, thankfully, it's not like we see in this county, let's just talk about Donegal for a moment, ever. A child being abducted ever. But if you were to only access social media, you would believe that on a regular occasion, children are approached in the street and asked to get into cars or vans. And then we start thinking and behaving as if that is genuinely very likely to happen. And we restrict what our children do and we helicopter over them. And you say you can't do that. And what's it based on? Is it based on a genuine concern that some harm could come to them? Thankfully, it doesn't seem to happen too often. Or are we conditioned and scared to think that danger is always imminent and it's for us that we're afraid, but we actually end up hindering the development of our children? That's a question, not a statement, but perhaps maybe we need to start thinking a little bit too. What do you think? John Ruddy joins me in studio. And it just so happens it was convenient, right? Because we were having this conversation about under-16s on social media, and you were able to call in, so it's great. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, how's it going? How are we doing?
Good, good, good. So the government seems to be wanting to get tough on this. You'd be very much in favour of it, would you? Why?
Very much so, and social media specifically, because social media is a brand new thing, you know, in the last couple of decades, barely. So the research is only really starting to come to light, and in the early research that has been shown, there is a distinct difference, say even kind of generationally between, say, millennials and then into Gen Z, where a lot of young people who kind of hit puberty had those smartphones, forward-facing cameras and all of that from an earlier age, now have much higher levels of anxiety, of depression. And that's partially because so much of social media is based around dopamine hits and addiction. And when your brain is still developing, as a child's brain is, it's a much more vulnerable time to be introduced to a really insidious...
What's the problem? What is harming children in this process? Because this could just be the latest iteration from television, from black and white to colour television, from the gaming console, from the, you know, cinema, sex objects. You know, when Marilyn Monroe came on the screen and, you know, she was able to express her sexuality as she did that put pressure on 14-year-old girls' brains, right? So I'm not saying for a moment that's it, but is this just not the latest iteration of stuff that happens all of the time?
You're not wrong in that there have always been moral outcries in that way. A major, major difference between then and now is when everybody's in watching a movie in the cinema, everybody's looking at the same thing. Everybody's seeing the same thing. When you are scrolling through social media on your phone, you are being fed specific content aimed at keeping you on your phone based on the information that you give it and that it takes from, like, down. And it's not just about the things that you click on and the things that you look at, but for example, it's been seen that if someone takes a few selfies of themselves on the Instagram app, but then deletes a couple of them, and say this is a teenage girl who does this, the algorithm then instantly starts throwing them more beauty products.
Yeah.
Because they're like, look, this person's clearly feeling insecure, so let's send them things. And there's this bizarre trend now too, where there's this kind of loss of, you know, kind of the preteen world, where you've got 10-year-olds now who are looking for adult skincare products.
It's not only that; it is. Targeting skin, it's damaging for them, but also it's the sexualization
100%.
Of young girls and boys. There's just no doubt that that's what it's doing. And then what happens is you go into Penny's and there's this tiny little item of clothing that's not suitable for anyone that it was designed for. But it's like, I'm not in any way diminishing the importance of this topic, okay? But dogs poo. Right, irresponsibly. Dog owners allow them to, right? But we don't ban dog ownership. Is it not going to be the case, potentially, that parents that don't necessarily scrutinise everything their children do will facilitate the workarounds? Because a lot of people are talking about how kids will find workarounds. The easiest workaround will be the parents. Mum, dad, right? So we ban it for everyone, okay? And yet those that are perhaps less likely to parent, like we perhaps think they should, will allow their young ones into that space anyway.
I mean...
So in other words, the all-out ban will not protect maybe, arguably, the most vulnerable children.
That's fair. And I mean, that again, has always been the case in some ways. There's been a lot of kind of talk amongst many teenagers about... what would it take for them to quit social media and this huge pressure for them all to be on it, you know, because that's the thing. It's like, if you're not on it, you're missing out on the trends. You're not getting the jokes. We've all been scared by 6-7 the last couple of months, you know, but, and if you're that one kid who's like, what is 6-7? Mm. They don't know. Mm. But many have reflected on the idea, if everybody were to be off social media, teenagers would be like, oh, happy days. Yeah. You know, it's like this excuse to be able to get off social media.
But there's
media.
A difference between one 15-year-old and another. And, you know, so at that point, where does it stop in terms of the influence then? Then do they stop watching Love Island, you know, where everything is sexualized, people are in bikinis, there's this free and easy approach to being intimate with someone, keeping up with the Kardashians, even some of the... subplots to programs like Stranger Things. So where does it end?
Because I think the major thing, you know, regarding sexualization, I think that is a different issue when it comes to what we see and what we promote and different things like that. I think the key factor for why we're talking about social media and under 16s not getting on it isn't just about the sexualization, because, you know, again, that is a major part of it. But it is, again, when everybody's watching Love Island, we're all seeing the same thing. We're all watching the same thing. It's not being catered specifically to us based on the data that they have taken from us.
You see, for me, really, I'm very much in favour of this, by the way. Yeah. Sometimes when I'm trying to tease out a conversation, people misinterpret what I feel. Anyone now... You know, maybe, I don't know what the ages are, but 13, 14, 15, 16, this is a nightmare. Yeah. This is absolutely terrible. Mm-hmm. But they're the ones that are going to have to take the hit if they go through with this. Really what we're thinking about here is the 11, 10, 9, 8, 7-year-olds now.
Exactly.
Right? Who will be blessed, hopefully, with not an expectation. They won't know what they're missing. They just simply don't go on there.
Exactly.
They can look over mom or dad's shoulder, right? But it's not their space. So we often think in the here and now, this very moment. But really, if we do this, we're normalizing not being on social media for the next crop of children coming through. And for me, that's incredibly worthwhile. And that's where my focus is at, rather than... a 15 or 16-year-old who thinks this is blooming unfair.
The horse has bolted in that
way.
Yeah,
exactly. Which is, you know. I'm not giving up on them. Don't get me wrong.
100%.
But they're the ones going to get the pain.
Yeah.
A 13-year-old who's never been on social media saying you're not allowed on social media to 16 and all of their friends aren't on it, That's easy. That's an easy enough pill to swallow. Yeah. Because you find something else to do, right?
And because, I mean, at the same time, those who were teenagers in and around 2015, 2016, they also took the hard pill because they had the absolute unregulated madness that it was. And the amount of, let's face it, the amount of suicides that have come from social media and from, you know, the cyberbullying that has been facilitated by social media. You know, you'd think that spaces such as Snapchat and Instagram and spaces like that, that do have this space for young people, that they should have a responsibility to them. And at the moment, yes, they don't.
But these are businesses.
Oh, I know they're businesses, and that's the problem.
And it's the thing is if something's free, you're the product.
Oh, absolutely.
So why would they be responsible? They're often dragged kicking and screaming to regulation because they know it hits the bottom line and it hurts investors.
Exactly. But that is up to our government, you know, who is representing the people to protect the people and to protect us from corporations rather than going, okay, well, you know, what do you want us to do now? What tax breaks do you want?
You see, it is a, as well too, it's a big bad old world out there, you know, and if kids need to be allowed to kid.
Yeah.
Really, I think, you know, and you, it needs to be a case where you play dress up, but you're not dressing up all of the time.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're exposed to stuff like all the big bad world stuff, and they don't need it. They don't need it. And they don't need to be judged on their looks or their shape, or they just need to get on with being children. And again, we have to think in our heads about 11, 10, 9, 8, 7 year olds. I anticipated a pushback from adults because now that the penny's starting to drop, right? Well, how do you prove someone's over 16? Well, you prove you're over 16 by giving your ID, identifying who you are, and that's where the pushback's coming from. Well, it's not 14 or 15-year-olds.
I mean,
you know.
In fairness now, with regards to the ID, that's something that you're going to need to, that they're very much going to need to be careful of too, is what companies are doing the ID checks, because that's been something that's been arising over in the UK where they've the access to adult content has been restricted and requires age verification. And there's now a lot of dubious questions about the companies, the private companies that are doing those ID checks, and what data are they taking and what data are they selling on. And so we need to be very careful with that when we're, you know, when we get to the step.
People think it's the minerals and the oil that's very valuable, and it is, do not get me wrong, but data. Data is a big, big currency. John, listen, thanks for your views. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, interesting stuff. What do you think, listeners? Let us know. Joined on the programme now by Councillor Liam Blaney. Liam, good morning to you. Thanks for chatting.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, quite a bit of concern at quite a dramatic change to the landscape at the famous Ballymastocker Strand. What's happened over what period of time before we, I suppose, discuss what's going to happen next?
Oh, look, we're back a long number of years, Greg. There was a stream, maybe. At the start of it, there was a stream comes down, a burn comes out of land across the road, and comes down onto the beach. And there was a report done a number of years ago for the council on erosion and the coastline in Donegal. And there's one of the pages of the report deals with Ballymastocker Bay. And I did mention this burn, and that it would have to be maintained once or maybe twice a year, or as was needed. And hasn't been this last maybe 12 to 15 years. It hasn't been maintained. And maintaining it means that trying to keep it out straight out of the water. And now, this last number of years that I've mentioned there, it has taken its own route. And over the years, it has undermined the sand dunes. And I've been raising it year after year, this last, I would say, 10 or 12 years at least. And nothing has been done about it. So
ironically, we talk about coastal erosion. It's really outward, isn't it? It's from inland water sources heading out towards the sea that's causing the problem, rather than what we're normally used to, and that is, you know, the sea and the storms and the wind coming the other direction.
Well, it's both on this occasion.
Okay.
The ones around to the east, there was a high tide blown straight in at the beach over the weekend, and the pictures speak for themselves.
You said the OPW...
totally unbelievable.
Yeah, there's at least a one-second delay on the line, Liam. My apologies. But you said the OPD have been reluctant to employ some methods to try and deal with the issue. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that?
Well, I think long before this stage, I think that we needed rock armour there to protect it, because I got a chance to race it in Lifford on Monday morning. And I said, I don't think the expertise is within Donegal County Council to come up with a solution for it. I've asked to do it. If not, they would look and see you get proper expertise. And I think that's the first thing that's needed, with the proper solutions for it. But I do believe part of that solution is going to be rock armour. And it's very difficult to get what they call the hard solutions, the rock armours, to get permission to do that. But look, I'm hoping that somebody will act now. I'm motioning for next month after the meeting again, that somebody will act now in it before it is too late. It's unfortunate it's gone this far.
What happens if nothing is done, Liam? And you know, we can have extreme weather events and it can make these things happen really quite quickly. But if this goes unchecked, what do you think potentially could happen?
The dunes, there's not many left in one particular area. It's not far from the Knockalla Coast Road. And it won't take long before it gets out onto the coast road, and the rest stage is going to be to do anything, and the coast road will be blocked off, and God knows what other damage is going to do. And you know, I don't think we can allow it to get that far. And I'm no expert on it, and I don't pretend to be an expert. I could be completely wrong, but if I'm wrong, I'd rather somebody come out and tell us, no, you're wrong, and that's not going to happen. It's going to turn around, and it's going to, through time, it's going to put sand back in there again. But unless we take measures to help that happen, I don't think it's going to happen, because it hasn't happened this last 15 years, you know.
Okay, Liam, thank you very much indeed. Councillor Liam Blaney there. Back to some of your comments, and quite a lot of you getting involved in the conversation about social media. Relating to John Ruddy's points, parental behaviour on phones, also very relevant. Lead by example, it's a shift needed in all of us. Phones are used way too much. Another, if everyone's off, no one will be on, or it creates the two-tier social system of those with the knowledge to access social media and those being kept from it. But you see, if you create an ecosystem on social media where young people generally aren't, then the attraction to be there is not necessarily there, potentially. So maybe that's how it might work. Another, like, honestly, social media has done more harm to the under 14 crowd than any kids. The world's in the state it is because the pre-millennial generation that used to say, don't believe everything you see on TV, turned around and immediately believed everything they read on social media. Education, media literacy and critical thinking skills are far more important than some absolutely useless ban that, if you speak to anyone who knows cyberspace and tech in general, they'll tell you is impossible to actually enforce. But they are coming up with other ideas to close off those workarounds, and we can see that in Australia. The difference is that a 25-year-old, a 30-year-old, a 35-year-old, we might not like what they're doing, but it's up to them what they do. The responsibility for someone under 18 is ours as a society. What anyone does over 18 within the boundaries of the law, it's not really up to us. A caller says, I work in early childcare. My son is in fifth class and he's the only child without a mobile phone. I think it's way too early. Only children in secondary school should have phones. Most of them all have TikTok accounts. No one to blame but their parents. I'm one of 35 parents who has said no. That's what we are up against. So this is a mom or dad. Their son is in fifth class and he's the only one out of 35 children, unless they're doubling it up and it's 17 children. Either way, it's a big stat, who doesn't have a mobile phone. What do you think about that? Another, give our kids a bit more credit. These kids by the age of 10 could walk rings around any adult on accessibility. Yeah, but I don't want adults walking rings around them on social media either. And that's exactly what some very horrible adults are doing, exploiting our kids. We wouldn't allow them unchecked into Dundrum supermarket or superstore. Would we allow them to walk around and engage and talk to strangers and put on clothes and the strangers would go, oh, that looks nice, or save, or take a picture and save it of them? Yet that's what's happening on socials. And last one, just for now, I'm all for the state parenting my child. Like, grow up and take responsibility for your own children. This is South Park all over again. Only ones letting your kids ruin their minds with social media is, the listener says, yourselves. I'm joined on the programme now by Pat McLaughlin, chairperson and head football coach at Northwest Special Olympics. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for joining us. Mark Peoples, athlete with the A-side football squad. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
And also Daniel O'Reilly, athlete with the B-side football squad. Good morning to you, Daniel.
Thank you, Greg.
How are you getting on?
Not too bad.
Good stuff, good stuff. The football's going well for you anyway.
I hope so, yes.
Brilliant stuff. Right, I'll start with you, Pat, if that's okay. Big news in terms of sponsorship, which is critical to the work that's done, and also advancements in qualifications, etc. Yeah. So what's going on?
Well, last time we spoke, we were just waiting on the draws, and we are pleased to announce that the Northwest Special Olympics have 25 athletes selected for four different sports, four head coaches for football and basketball, and five assistant head coaches, chaperones.
Yep, and Kate, this is a record, isn't it?
It's one of the biggest selections, I think.
Well, let's just say it's a record.
Yeah, well, okay. We'll say it's a record, yeah, especially for our club. So it can
it's certainly one of the biggest selections from Ulster, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
I think we can say that without any doubt. So nine athletes representing in football, two in golf, and the rest in basketball. So that's a good broad representation.
It is.
Mark, you're one of those selected.
Yeah.
How does it feel?
That's exciting. It's first time going. I've been here for 6 years.
Yeah.
It's the first time being picked.
What position do you play in?
Striker, but I'm being picked as a defender.
Why do they do that to us?
I think that's my manager.
All right. You're not slowing down, no?
I don't think so yet.
Go deep, Mark. But still, so what team will you be a part of?
The A-team football.
And under what's the overall name of the team? Is it Ulster? Is it
Ulster?
Ulster it is, okay, right. And is this an inter-provincial competition, Pat?
Yeah, this will be held in Dublin. It'll be Ulster, Connacht, Munster, Leinster, and I'm not sure who else, but it's played over 3-4 days.
And Daniel, you are in the B side football squad as well too. Excellent stuff. Mm-hmm. Exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. And what position are you going to be playing in? Do we know?
I am in midfield.
And is that your best position?
Yeah, it's my.
All right. Okay. So.
I got a bad hand.
You did get a bad hand, but you know what? You're going to make a fantastic go of it, no doubt. Pat, we talked about new sponsors and sponsorship. People always do give generously, and they really do have to, because the costs involved in, and Finn Harps will tell you this, or the Finn Valley AC will tell you this, the cost in getting athletes to competition and supporting them and kitting them out and everything, it's massive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's phenomenal, you know, because with this amount of athletes that we have for the one club, we're talking in thousands and... so then we're kind of looking for sponsorships for various things and fundraising. You know, it's phenomenal. We're talking maybe 18,000, maybe a lot more. And then my transport costs are phenomenal as well, because apart from our own football and basketball, we have all island training, which is extra cost to transport and things like that. So, a lot of money involved. So a lot of fundraising as well.
Am I fair to say the likes of football and other sports, basketball have been kind of mainstays. Golf has come on a bit more recently, not right yesterday or what have you, but or has golf been around for as long as the other sports?
I don't know about golf and Special Olympics as such, but I know from our club point of view that we started golf in March last year.
It's relatively new.
Yeah. So we have two athletes already selected, which is absolutely amazing. One of the athletes is just a young 17-year-old, and what I believe is that this boy can swing a ball like Rory McIlroy.
Boccia is...
Bocce,
a big one. Now, this, I'm showing my ignorance. This is a very, very popular sport around the world.
It is, but I'm only
sort of learning about it really through this conversation. It's a ball sport. Is it similar, to bowls or...?
Yeah, it's very similar to bowls, but there's different rules. Whereas bowls that you can stand and throw the ball down a bowling... But this one, the ball apparently is going to be thrown for the knee.
Mm.
And then it's on a 60-foot mat. So, and then you have barriers around it. So we're learning about it as well. But the idea of bocce coming into our club is that we have a lot of athletes who are kind of too old to play basketball and football.
Yeah,
so we're trying to introduce something new, which is bocce. It's wheelchair accessibility as well, which is a great thing.
It's a very inclusive sport.
So we're trying to get... It starts this Sunday. But we've opened it up out there to everybody with intellectual disabilities, 16+. We've also put out there that people in wheelchairs can access this game as well, which is a great thing for our club as well.
You've been putting out your Scottish feelers too. Like everything, you start something new, it costs money.
Yeah.
You headed to Scotland to get some value, did you?
Yeah, we did. We contacted a company in America about bocce balls, but the Mr. Trump's tariffs have kind of killed us in that one. So we contacted other people in Holland and Australia and things like that. And then just I went online and discovered that there was a wee shop in the west end of Glasgow with done bocce balls, and I lived there all my life and never knew it was there.
Random. Isn't it? It's amazing. Your focus still on the football for some time, Mark. You're only young. How exciting is it getting selected and preparing for a big competition? You know, the away days, the teammates, all that kind of stuff. I can imagine it's not something I ever really did, except with GAA for a short while when I was younger. But is it a great buzz? Is it great fun? Or
it's a new thrill for me anyway. Too exciting for me to kind of go into, but it's new teammates, new friends, new way of trying to do training.
Yeah.
And training's probably going to be hard. I can already feel it already in my legs. My knees are going to, even though I'm young, but it's getting there.
You have to up the levels, don't you? Because you're going up in levels, so you have to up your levels.
I have to try and now and do defending drills instead of attacking drills.
Yeah. But that being said, I mean, whilst it's not necessarily your chosen position, It will potentially make you a more rounded player too, as well too. You know, more of a, and I can see you going up anyway.
I'm not scared of getting in the ball anyway. So
it's like the Jose Mourinho's goalkeeper going up and scoring the late one. That's what you'll be doing.
Fair share of goals now, I would say.
Yeah, of course. And what about you, Daniel? I know you always keep yourself at a good level of fitness. Are you having to up the training though, going up into this competition?
Yeah, I've got something to say. I feel happy and I am excited for the Ireland Games in June. I played for Ulster in the last game in 2018 and I enjoyed it. I love the training and I will do my best.
Of course you will. No bother to you. You'll make us very, very proud. Pat, so when's it all kick off?
It kicks off, we leave Letterkenny on the 18th of June and then it kicks off straight away on Friday, which I think will be divisioning day. I'll decide what kind of level you'll be playing at, and then it just continues right up to Monday.
Yeah, I like things, but I like them sooner than that. Do you know what I mean? I don't know what you feel like, Mark. I mean, great, but can it not be 2 weeks?
I just
need
to get straight on that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. And you have to watch out for injuries and all that type of stuff as well. Listen, it's going to be no doubt. Again, just to go back to the sponsorship and the support, because it's not just the team, it's not just the travel, it's the expenses presumably for chaperones and coaches as well. You know what I mean? And this is to give people amazing life-changing opportunities.
Yeah, it is. And everything comes at a price. So we've sent letters out to local businesses. We're appealing to businesses and any companies out there who want to approach us and try and help us out with some sort of small sponsorship. Like I say, we need kit bags for all the athletes and whatever else comes in, you know, it's a big, big cost. Everything we do, transport, sponsorships, and
yeah, it's all money.
It's all money, yeah.
And even to the butcher.
I'm
going to get it right before 10 o'clock. But even that, though, you know, you say, right, well, what can we do? How do we do it? And then the bills come in and the costings come in and everything costs money.
So we acquire two bocce mats. Now, these mats are 60 feet long by 12 feet wide. So we acquire two of them. And then we had to get a rack made, rack. Yeah. And then we had to buy sidebars and we had to buy the balls. So roughly that's kind of set us back about 3,000. But we have to try and keep these athletes at the club that don't play any sports whatsoever.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And also, too, I can imagine those that are involved in the other sports will have a go at that as well, because if you're competitive in nature, you will compete about two flies running up a wall.
Yeah,
that's just the way it is.
So we've said to the old athletes, like, come back. We've got bocce. This is easy. You don't have to run about. We say to the current athletes here, but these two here, they're saying no. And we've opened up to new athletes, and especially kind of ones in wheelchairs and things like that.
Yeah, Mark, can you imagine if you pulled your hamstring playing bocce?
I wouldn't be shocked. No, I wouldn't.
Brilliant stuff. Well, Daniel O'Reilly, great to see you again. You're a regular too, and it's always lovely to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. The very best with your training and ahead of the big competition now at the start of the summer.
Well done to you.
And Mark, thank you so much for calling up.
Thank you very much.
Best of luck with everything and the training and all that type of stuff. And as always, Pat, thank you so much.
Just
to let you know that we've a lovely wee feature coming up for you in the not too distant future. We are going to be crossing over to Aris Gwydor. Sinead Black is out and about for us today, and we're going to be chatting to Mary McAuliffe from Dunfanaghy, who's celebrating her 105th birthday this weekend. Isn't that amazing? Now I'm looking at our camera. We have located down at Aris Gwydor, and they're all looking fantastic. Mary, Sinead and Joe is down there as well. So if you will be interested in that, please do tune in, stay tuned in. But also you can watch that as well too. So that's coming up as we mark Mary's 105th birthday. She is in Aris Gwydor, so looking forward to that. Right, let me see. Hello, Greg. Any chance you could give Roisin Hegarty a mention today, as she's leaving on the bus to go to Sweden to box in the Golden Girls competition? I want to wish Roisin the best of luck this weekend from Eunan McNamee. Brilliant stuff. Good morning to Bridget McElhaney, Cara Gart. She loves your show. Loves playing Highland Bingo. Brilliant, Bridget. Well done. Listen, thank you so much for your support. It's greatly appreciated. Can I say hello too, please, to Barry Lafferty? He's in Raphoe, and Barry is 18 years old today. Happy birthday to you, Barry. Have a fantastic day, will you? From Carmel and Mickey in Glenties, sending on their best wishes to you. Right, there is a lot of disappointment around after St Eunan's College in Letterkenny has been omitted out of the first tranche of a €7.55 billion National Schools Investment Programme. It's not for national schools, it's a schools investment programme that is national. In fact, only one school in Donegal, St Columba's College, Stranorlar, will be supported by going to tender or construction under the plan, which was announced this week. Damien McCrory is principal of St Eunan's College in Letterkenny. He joins me now. Damien, good morning to you. This is incredibly disappointing news,
morning,
isn't
Greg.
It?
How
with
are
all
you?
The work that has been undertaken, a massive $7.55 billion, and yet this project is not on the list. What's the feeling in the college?
Yeah, the feeling, we're devastated, to be quite honest. We're extremely disappointed. We got the word whenever it was communicated yesterday by the media, and that was our first notion that we weren't on this list, and we were highly disappointed, angry as well, at the fact that we're not on it. No, but first of all, can I just congratulate St. Eunan's, or St. Columbus College in Stranorlar, and as well deserved. And I think that, but it's highly disappointing that one school in the county this size one school has been listed, okay, for the next 2 years.
Yeah, and it's never was
tender or construction.
It never was for any of us an either or. It should have been both. This has been a long time coming, and you know some of the hurdles that were overcome in terms of extending out planning and all that kind of stuff. That felt like the big work. I thought it was almost inevitable given the quality of the application and the need that this would be included. So it's really surprising to me.
Yeah, it's a 30-year campaign. It started with Father Michael Kearney, and then during Chris Tarby's time then, from 2009 to 2019, and Chris had the disappointment as well. During that time, the planning was turned down, and then we started the campaign. We went on the ADAPT 2 programme, which Columbus is on as well, and it was a fast-track programme, and we joined that in 2019. So we're nearly 7 years in that programme now. And throughout that time, huge amount of surveys, huge amount of money has been spent regarding gathering all that surveys, doing all the architectural work that needed to be done at that time as well. So you're talking, certainly you're in the millions, that was spent, trying to get all that compiled through the planning process, and working. And remember, our planning was going through at the time when COVID was on, and we were working with local residents, working with people, trying to ensure, that everyone was included in that during a very difficult time. And we did get through it. And as you said there, we thought that would have been the major hurdle, to get over that. And then it was just a matter of time then with regards to when the department would decide. So we've been waiting for this strategic plan to be announced since November. I have been communicating with the department and with the relevant people, over the last number of months, to see when is it coming. And I was making the calls. I wasn't getting no information from anyone really, regarding that. I had one person in the department that I could call. But in the last couple of weeks, everything went silent, and I was a bit worried. I was a little bit worried at that point because I wasn't hearing anything back. But again, people can be off, people can be away, people are moved.
Or people know and they don't want to speak to you. Yeah, this rollout.
People know when they don't want to speak. Yeah,
exactly. This rollout covers 26, 27. So unless something dramatically changes, this pushes this project out to at least 2028, and would there be that level of money available in that year? What is the situation about planning permission, though, and how long that might last? Is that an issue?
Our planning is up until March 2027. So that's planning done in 2022, and it's up until March 2027. So really, we don't know where we stand now with regards to everything. Everything is up in the air. We've had no communication from the department as yet, or from the building unit, how we progress. We're still at the pre-tender stage, Everything has been placed in. Everything is ready to go. We're just ready for the sanction, from the department to get the shortlist of at the pre-tender stage and then to go to tender. But that does take some time, and I was aware of that. You have to allow at least 8 months, for that process to be filled before it can then, construction would start. So we were aware of that, but there was a little bit of hope there, that we would get to that stage and we could continue. We need our facilities upgraded, and that's the reality of it. And the campaign has been going on for 30 years. The last major project that has happened in St. Junan's College was 1979, and before that it was 1930. Mm-hmm. So, and the school was built in 1906. So, as you can imagine, our facilities are now. And saying that, we have just released a statement there from the school this morning. We have fantastic students here, and fantastic staff that work and help students reach their potential. And we will continue to do that, and we'll continue to do our best. But it is time, but it's not good enough.
Can I ask if we have to work
in these conditions?
Are you given reasons for being omitted, right? Things went silent in terms of communications with the department in the last couple of weeks. If you are unsuccessful, are you notified, and are any reasons given? Because that would be a critical, important part of any multi-billion euro project.
And that's the reason we have one question for political representatives. We have one question for the department. Why? Okay. And at present, okay, we have had no reason. As I said yesterday, I had to wait for the announcement to be made by the minister. I read it. I didn't even know it was going to be announced yesterday until I read it on the RTE news yesterday morning, and that was my first indication that. Yesterday was the day that we were going to hear, and we had to wait for the announcement and for the list to be released. And when it was one of the political representatives that I'd made contact with early yesterday morning, okay, that made contact with me to say that we weren't on the list. Mm. Okay, so that's how I found out that I wasn't on the list. And needless to say, I wasn't too happy with that phone call. And I expressed that at the time, and I'm still not happy. Okay, the fact that, remember, it's not about me; it's about the students that we have here, or potential students that we have, and about the community of Letterkenny and further afield. Okay, mm-hmm. because we have a huge catchment area, so it's just not like we go from down as far as Dunfanaghy, over as far as Newton Cunningham, out as far as Drumkeen. You know, we have a huge span here, and we're trying to do our best. And we have reached our capacity with regards, you know, we have a wait list. You know, we're trying our best to accommodate everyone where possible. But we have over 1,000 students in a school, okay, and we need an upgrade very, very quickly.
Okay,
we
really do. Okay. Points incredibly well made, Daniel. Thank you very much for your time. That's Damien McCrory, principal of St. Eunan's College, Letterkenny. Okay, we're covering the news that St. Eunan's College in Letterkenny has been left out of the first tranche of a 7.55 billion schools investment programme. Good news, though, St. Columba's College in Snorlow will be supported by going to tender all construction under the plan, which was announced yesterday. So just to reiterate, this is not an either-or. Everyone is delighted for St. Columba's, but there is real devastation around St. Eunan's College. An awful lot of effort has been put in to get this project over the line through COVID and what have you. And I think they would have been within their rights to be optimistic that they might be successful. As it turns out, that's not the case. Government Councillor Donald Mandy Kelly joins me to discuss this. Any indication as to why St. Eunan's was left out, Donald?
Listen, Greg, as you've said, and I was listening to the principal, Damien McGrory, there, and I don't think there's much more I can add to it. You can understand and you can hear as disappointment on what happened here. And listen, I commend St. Columba's. It's good that one school has been successful here. But, you know, for one school and the entire county of Donegal to be successful and the rest drop, particularly St. Eunan's College, you know, there's a lot of questions need answered there. And for me, it's utterly disappointing, Greg, because I suppose from my own personal point of view, and I suppose Damien McGrory could back me up on this, you know, I feel I have left no stone unturned in relation to trying to secure this fund for this project to go ahead for the provision of second-level education, particularly in Letterkenny and surrounding areas. And, you know, to get that news yesterday morning, to say I'm disappointed, it would be an understatement. I'm utterly gutted, you know, because particularly for Damien and for the students, the staff, you know, their committee, I know firsthand that the work and effort they put in there, the student council as well, the students themselves, you know, and it's utterly disappointing.
Okay, why was
that
missed out? You have obviously a very senior TD in Patrick O'Gallagher in your county. You've got a junior minister in Charlie McConnell Logan. You've got access to the actual minister in charge of this department. Why was St. Eunan's left out, and what's going to be done to get it in?
Oh, Greg, first of all, I don't fully agree with you that I've access to the minister in charge of this department. That minister doesn't come under the Fianna Fáil banner, as you know. To say that I don't have access would be wrong as well. But listen, I have made representation on every opportunity that I could get. Yesterday, I spent most of the day on the phone trying to get answers. And, you know, as Damien McGrory clearly stated there, the only main question he has is why. And that's a question that I want answered myself. And unfortunately, at the minute, I haven't got the answer to it. But it's something that I'm fighting hard and pushing hard for us to get the answer. I have asked, is there an opportunity here that that we can fight this, you know, and come back at it and hopefully get funding from party First and Unis College to go forward. And I'm not certain that can happen either. But
well, what do you mean? What have you been told in relation to that? Why might that not be doable?
Well, it just depends now, Greg, on what fund becomes available. Is there an option that there could be extra fund to come down the line? That's not clear, but it's something that I've asked that be looked into going forward, because it's important that we do everything and can continue to do everything we can to try to seek fund to get this over the line. Because, I mean, Greg, at the end of the day, St. Union's College, it's a long-established college, a fantastic college, and I mean the conditions. Listen, maybe conditions is not the right word, but the facilities that they're having to use at the minute and having to teach in, you know, in relation to two woodwork rooms, two construction rooms, you know, two science labs, technographics, and you know, it's just not
right,
for purpose for the amount of students that's there.
We have we are in the position again. Just to reiterate, we've got two TDs, two government TDs, and one of them is a minister. What are they going to do? I haven't got access to Charlie McConnell. I presume you were speaking to him. What is he going to do?
Yeah, but hold on a minute, Greg. We need to get one thing very, very clear here, and that's that we don't have two TDs. We have five TDs in Donegal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and every one of them should be pulling together to get this over the line. This is not about pointing the finger or reiterating about who's in government.
I understand what you're saying, and I'm sure all TDs will be pulling the same direction. But I can't ignore the fact that two are part of the government that made this decision, Donal, and you would hope that they would have more influence than three opposition TDs might.
Yeah, well, I understand where you're coming from there, Greg, but listen, as I say, there's five TDs in Donegal, and it's important that they all pull together and try and get this over the line for the betterment of the county of Donegal, not just for Letterkenny as a whole, because, I mean, the students coming from all over attending St. Union's College. I attended myself, my whole family before me attended my own young fellows in St. Union's, and it's a fantastic school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
has Minister Charlie McConnell indicated to you what he's going to do to try and get this over the line?
Well, I have been talking with Charlie, and Charlie's going to continue to do his level best to seek what happened here and try to see if there's an opportunity to get extra funding or as they're going to be coming open and down the line. And, you know, it's important that he continues to do that in the situation that he's in. So, listen, I'll continue to lobby with Charlie going forward and try to get answers, number one, and try to get this over the line, most importantly, number two.
Yeah. Okay, we'll watch on with interest. Thank you very much indeed. Councillor Donal Mandy-Kelly there, and earlier, just before the break, Damien McCrory, who is the principal of St. Union's College in Letterkenny. They're devastated. They've made a very strong argument for this investment in the college. It's been there for a very long time, and it's an excellent space for education. I know that, and they have the skill set to maximise the facilities they have available to them to give students and teachers the best experience possible. But it's clear that any school or college or organisation of this scale does require investment. And €7.55 billion was up for grabs, and not a red cent for St Union's College in Stranraer. But again, and we heard it directly from the principal, a big congratulations to St Columba's College in Stranraer, another fantastic education centre. And thankfully they've been included, and hopefully the works there will go ahead just as soon as is possible. But no such luck for St Union's College. Now, changing gears, we are heading to Arsguidor to say a very good morning to Sinead Black. Hi, Sinead.
Good morning, Greg.
Well, Thank you so much for joining us. And I'll hand it over to you because you have an incredibly special guest with you, Sinead.
Absolutely. Well, I've already had the most joyous morning and the biggest ray of sunshine that I've met this morning as we join Mary McAuliffe here in Gweedore as she is just about to celebrate her 105th birthday. And just for our listeners over the radio, you can also live stream with us on Facebook. I think it's an absolute joy. I know it is going to be an absolute joy for the next 15 minutes or so, Greg. So, Mary, a very good morning to you.
And to you, Sue.
And we have so much to talk about. I'm not even sure where to begin, but thank you very much for allowing me to come and talk to you today. Wow. And you have had such a wonderful life and so many memories that I'm only dying to hear all about. So you grew up in Falkara.
I did, yeah.
In the 1920s.
Yeah, yeah. And my mother was from Gweedore.
Yes.
And we were doing Irish and from school Irish, but she thought I should go over to her mother, my granny, in Dover and go to school there. So she came over with me every Sunday. She bought me a bike and she made me learn, and I cycled from Falkara to Gweedore every Sunday.
Every Sunday. You wouldn't catch me doing that now today.
But she came halfway.
Yes.
She always came halfway. But there were very few cars and buses on the road then.
Mm-hmm. So it was 13 miles of a cycle for you?
She came halfway, and then she'd say, "You've all downhill now, Mary, and there'll be no problem." So that happens.
So away you went then down the hill to Gweedore. So there, your education was a big part of your life. You're a highly educated woman. So
I wouldn't say that, but I worked anyway at it.
Yeah, so you went to Gweedore then to learn the Irish.
Yeah, went to school there, and then from that I went to college in Letterkenny for the first 2 years. And then
you got a scholarship to go there, may I add, which is very impressive, to go to Letterkenny. And you stayed there for a while.
I did, yeah, I stayed there. I was there for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Five.
3 years.
You were in Gweedore for two.
I was in Gweedore for two, and then I was in Letterkenny.
For five.
Yeah, and then I wanted to do domestic science, and then I was sent to...
Where was the centre? The Munster Institute in Cork. The Munster Institute.
Oh, yes. I don't know why I was... My mother is from Gweedore.
Yes.
And she's very, very great with friends from Gweedore. And there's an Irish college running every summer in Garter Hork. And all Dublin people and came out. Very important thing. And this lady from Gweedore was speaking there for them.
A lady called Phoebe Hilarish.
Yeah, yeah. And she was very friendly going to school and that with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
She took me under her shawl, and that's why I was knocked everywhere. Pushed everywhere.
That's why she got the opportunities in education.
Yeah.
Sheila V. Hilarish was aware of the scholarship.
Yes.
But you needed to be a fluent Irish speaker to get it. So my granny, being the smart lady she was, listened to Sheila V. Hilarish and sent Mommy over to her grandmother in Gweedore for 2 years to learn the Irish. So she got the scholarship to Loretto and Letterkenny.
It is.
Yes, and that led you to Cork then, Mary, as well?
I was from Letterkenny from up to your intercept. And then I don't know why they sent me down to Cork, but...
Tell Sinead about the domestic science, the farm management in the Munster Institute.
What did you do there?
It was famous for that. Well, you had down south... All the farmers have children at those kind of schools,
yes,
and they're into farming in a very big way. And then they get jobs in hotels and that. So I don't know who told my mother.
Sheila V. Hilarish.
Yeah, the woman from Gweedore told my mother all that thing. She was informed. And I think that's why I went there.
As you can hear, Greg, fascinating level of education that Mary has here. And coming home then, Mary, was a different experience. You were telling me when you came home on the train, you have vivid memories of coming home then.
I was there for a few years, yeah. And I came home then, of course, to get my home for my holidays. And when I got off the station at Letterkenny from the train, I wondered why nobody from home was for me. Mm-hmm. And it was my auntie that I didn't expect to see at all from Scotland. Mm-hmm. And I said, where's Mammy and Daddy? Your Mammy died last night.
Yeah.
That's the answer I got.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you how bad I was after that.
Yes.
No.
And after that, Mary, after that sad news, you took on a big responsibility then of...
My father says, Mary, you'll have to go down and do your mother's shop.
Yeah.
That's all I got. So there wasn't much fun for Mary, not like the teenagers today.
And you were the eldest, weren't you, Mammy?
Yeah, I was.
The eldest of seven children.
Seven, yeah.
So not only did you become a shopkeeper, you became a mammy as well.
Chrissy was only four.
Yeah. And you did a fabulous job we were talking about earlier, Mary.
I had to work very hard.
You had to work very hard. So that led you on then, as many people listening today will know, about Sweeney's Corner Shop.
Hmm.
You were a huge influence there.
Yeah,
and so many people loved meeting you in the shop. Would you like to talk some more about the shop?
Very popular. When I was always reading the magazines then, you know.
Yes.
They were always reading. And, you know, a young girl, I was in fashion.
Yes.
And that gave me a great flair for it.
And Greta, your sister, was studying dress design.
She was.
So there was two into fashion.
Yeah, she was in Dublin studying that. So we got on great. I was away buying old fashioned things, and they were coming from everywhere.
And rightly so, because even the style of this lady today, I was a bit nervous coming this morning. I thought I better dress up for Mary, because I know you're a huge, huge influence in the style in Dunfanaghy and Falcarra as well. And your shop led on to great things from Sweeney's. Then you were there for 50, up until 50 years, and then you evolved it into more the much more than a normal shop.
Yeah.
You moved.
I had to do the shop and I had to do the children.
That's right.
But when did it become the Tweed and Fashion Shop?
When I put Daddy, my husband, was working in Dunfanaghy.
Okay, Jack.
And
where did you meet him? Tell Sinead about where you met
him. Oh, I met him and Frank Karen got a hark because he was, you know.
About dancing?
Well, I met him before dancing, no. Mm. I met him just as who he was.
Yeah. And Jack was a Kerry man. And we were saying that Donegal and Kerry are playing this weekend and Mary's supporting Kerry. Now, you'll be written for Donegal, won't you, Mary?
They'll be waiting for me to do good today.
You're doing brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. And so then, you met Jack and you married Jack.
I met Jack and I married Jack, yeah.
And you were still living in Falcarra.
Yeah.
And you had your family there, Mary, Anne and Sean.
Three family.
Yeah. And when Granda died in 1969... Daddy and yourself. Daddy had his chemist shop in Dunfanaghy, and you decided to move to Dunfanaghy as well.
Yeah.
So what was the shop called when you moved to Dunfanaghy?
Well, they still ran the shop, Chrissy and Michael.
Yeah, no, Michael and Auntie Carmel ran the shop in Falcarra.
Yeah.
But what shop did you run in Dunfanaghy? You set up the Tweed and Fashion Shop.
I did, because upstairs Daddy had the pharmacy.
Aye.
And I had a big room upstairs, chair and asbestos stairs going up to it. And that's where I had it.
And you had a lot of people coming to you from all over Donegal.
Letterkenny.
By their bridal.
All their bridal wear, they came from everywhere.
Yeah, she had lots of brides.
And even people from Letterkenny. But Dunfanaghy is well known for tourists and that anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
you sold a lot of lovely Irish crafts.
I did. I went in for all Irish craft.
So the time in the shop must have been...
I was very popular.
I can imagine you were very, and you still are very popular, Mary, because with you here now, when you go still at the young age of almost 105 this weekend, and you still like to get out, don't you, and go up to McClafferty's here, we'll say a big hello to all them, up for the shopping. Yeah. You still do your grocery shopping? You still like to go out and about?
Pardon?
You still like to go out and about with your grocery shopping?
Oh, yeah, oh, I'm just working away as I usually was.
Yes.
I'm not changed, no.
It's absolutely fascinating to hear even how... I'm gobsmacked, Greg, of how well Mary looks and how fabulous that she is even today.
Oh, thank you. I'm ordinarily healthy, yeah.
You are.
I worked very hard and cried very hard.
Yes. A lot of joy.
No, it did me no harm, but... And my old career was upside down.
Yeah. And it's lovely to have Mary here today as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's a big party later on.
So you believe.
And tell me this now. You're not only so talented in fashion, in the shop, in your education, but you're a good singer as well, Mary. You're doing me out of a house and home here now with your talent.
Yeah,
would you give me a wee song today?
Hmm?
Would you give me a wee verse?
Oh, God.
The Shortcut to the Rosses. Uh-huh. The Shortcut to the Rosses.
I mightn't remember it.
Try.
Just a little bit.
A few lines.
By the shortcut to the Rosses, a fairy girl I met. I was taken by her beauty as a fish is in the net. The fertile looks ten. No, let me go again. Okay. I couldn't drink. I went too high. By the shortcut to the Rosses, says I'll go nevermore, lest I should. Oh, no, I can't do it.
You're all right, don't worry. Would you like me to sing you a song, Mary?
By the shortcut to the Rosses, a fairy girl I met. I was taken by her beauty as the fishes in the net. The ferns on turn to look at her, so very fine was she. And her hair was like the seaweed that flows in from the sea. By the shortcut to the Rosses, 'tis I'll go nevermore, lest she who stole away my heart should also steal my soul, lest she take my soul and crush it like a dead leaf in her hand. For the shortcut to the Rosses is the way to fairyland.
Hey! What about that?
Oh, I don't know how I did that. Don't you with that anywhere now.
It's a little bit late for that.
No, because I'm not good today. I'm not.
Who needs Daniel O'Donnell when you have Mary? Huh? Now, speaking of that, Greg, I think we have a lovely surprise for Mary. Would I be right?
You would be right. Just give us one second here now. Let me see.
No problem. Now, Mary, I have a special message for you.
Okay, go ahead. You set it up for me. Yep.
Oh, no, I'm just going to tell Mary
what's happening.
I
didn't hear.
I have a special message for you, Mary. If you just want to take a little listen to this, are you ready?
Hello, Mary. This is Daniel here, and I'm just delighted to get the chance to send a wee message to wish you a very happy 105th birthday. I hope that you're having a great day, and I'm sure you're celebrating in style with everybody there. Hopefully, our paths will cross soon again, but listen, enjoy the day. God bless, and lots of love to you, Mary.
There you are.
Who's that?
That's Daniel O'Donnell.
Ah, 'tis not.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So he wanted to wish you a happy birthday today. Have we plenty of time, Greg?
We'll just get a wee song, ma'am. Or do you want to chat? Sinead, we had such a beautiful song already. It's completely up to you. We just have a wee bit of business news to squeeze in.
No problem. Well... Mary, before you go, have you any advice for me to live this long, happy life? Because honestly, I have had such, myself and Joe Dex here as well, have been honoured with your company this morning.
Oh, not at all.
So for anybody listening or anybody today that you'd want to give advice, how do you live a long, happy life like Mary McAuliffe?
I don't think it's a happy life because I came home on the day that my mother died.
Yes.
And she was dead and laid out when I came from college.
But from that then, there was happiness. And you had, your shop.
Jack. Oh, well, I made a great success of the shop, but sure, I cried every day.
Yeah.
That was only for 10 years, Mammy. What about meeting Jack?
Oh, yeah.
Your own children.
Oh, that was lovely, yeah.
Yeah, so yes. There was lots of joy, too.
Oh, there was a lot of joy. Well, that was a good way.
They came from far and near. You're 105. Sinead's looking for a wee bit of advice about how she could get to 105.
And dressed so well and chose out all her wonderful clothes
Mary,
today.
Mary, plenty hard work and crying.
Hard work.
Daddy couldn't help me. He didn't know anything about the shop.
Yes. And sure, a good cry helps.
And to get over a problem, I cried.
I
had nobody to advise me.
Yes.
I had a very good uncle in business and got in Guidor here. Yeah. You see, all the McFaddens were in business and they were great. And he was very good. He came every Sunday to tell me what was on the shelves, you know.
Yes.
And especially men's clothes, they called it the simit, you know, the vest. And I wouldn't know any. And he came every Sunday and he taught me everything.
About what to buy.
About what to buy. And what was, I didn't know the names of the things. And what was on the desk.
What's on the shop.
And he came every Sunday with his van and spent an hour or two with me in the shop.
Yeah.
And that's how I was trained.
Well, Mary, since you sang a song for me, I think it's only fair I should sing you a song.
Yeah.
Is that fair enough for your birthday?
Yeah.
Before we do as well, Mary, would you mind giving your lovely mum these flowers as well? So from the Greg Hughes Show, Mary, we'd like to give you a very happy birthday.
Gorgeous.
And we'd love to give you these flowers.
Who's giving me that?
That's from Highland Radio and from Greg Hughes Show.
And then tell them all. That's a marvellous thing altogether.
Well, Mary, listen, you're just marvellous and you're a pleasure to meet. And I hope that our listeners enjoyed listening to you. And I can't keep you because I know you're going to have a big party now for the afternoon.
Never.
She's getting the hair done, Greg. You are. And you're going to have a fabulous day, and rightly so, because you're
but
a fabulous lady.
Don't tell me what they're doing at all for me and get over.
And you're able to keep up with it all. So thank you very much,
thanks,
Mary, for letting us talk.
It was lovely meeting your Joe and yourself.
And I want to wish you a very happy birthday, and I'm sure you're
thank
going to
you,
have
Mary.
A good one now. Thank I'll leave you with a little verse, because I know
you.
We're running out of time. Is that okay?
Sinead's going to sing.
Yeah. When first I saw the love light in your eyes, I thought the world held not a joy for me. And even though we drifted far apart, I never dreamed of what I dreamed of thee. You know what, Mary?
Yeah, I do very well.
I love you as I never loved before. Since first I saw you on the village green, come to me as my dreams of love roar. I love you as I loved you when you were sweet.
Where are you?
Thank you very much, Mary.
Kenny, don't
Sinead,
you've,
you've done a couple of duets in your time. That's up there, you know. That's absolutely beautiful across generations of two fantastic women. Thank you so very much, Sinead. Thanks, Joe. Thanks to all the team. And a big happy birthday to Mary. And lots of love coming into you from all across the country. Thank you so much, Sinead. Chris Ashmore. We have cut you short, right, because we celebrated a woman's 105th birthday. And do you know what? You're a gentleman and that's perfectly fine. So we're going to get up to the podcast straight away because it's a cracker this week and it's live very shortly for you to listen at your leisure. And it's also broadcast after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. So what's on the show today?
Yes.
Or this week, I should say.
This week, a real Donegal success story. We'll hear about how two brothers started selling bobble hats to local sports teams. They got a good reaction. And here we are a few years later. And O'Reilly's, run by Martin and Stephen O'Reilly, they've got a thriving business. They've just moved into a new premises, over €2 million invested in Seisean O'Neill in Balbuffet, and their sports and leisure wear products known and growing throughout the country, more and more clubs getting involved. And they've also had orders from the likes of the Garda College in Templemore for leisure wear. So we've a clip here as well, and we'll hear about their business.
We were importing quite a majority. We looked at a couple of different countries. China, extremely high quality, but had large minimum order quantities. Pakistan was probably more of a stepping stone for us at the beginning. We were very fortunate enough. After 2 years, we were able to kind of partnership with a factory out there that gave us exclusive rights. So that was really good. And ultimately, it's nearly turned full circle now in the last 2 months that we're manufacturing here in Balbuffet. And just, I think it's good. You know, we have probably the guts of 32, 33 staff here now. And, you know, with ongoing, like at one stage, Chris, during the summer, there was issues between Pakistan and India. And, you know, that there, you have to understand that, you know, that there's a lot of people in our company maybe paying mortgages and families, stuff like that, that we felt we had to take stuff into our own control. And now with that there, production facility here in Balbuffet with embroidery, the printing, the jerseys, that, you know, has taken it back into our own hands.
Brilliant. Great for the business. Great for Seisean O'Neill. Great for Balbuffet and the county as a whole. A really interesting story. And you can hear all of that on this week's Business Matters podcast, and it's live now.
It'll be live at lunchtime today.
Oh, keep us in suspenders. Okay, and you can listen to it then whenever you like, and you can download it as well. It's available on Spotify and iTunes, just in case you prefer to listen to your podcast that way when out for a walk or a run. And it's broadcast after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday. And if anyone wants to get in contact with you, Chris,
You can contact me. Best way is by email, so it's businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
You're an absolute gentleman. That's where we leave it on the programme today. Back tomorrow morning at 9.